What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, the morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is March 29th, and oh yes, we are gonna talk, guess what, about baseball. We had opening day yesterday. Oh, it was so fun. Thank you all so much for joining me on the live stream on the homepage inside of playback.tv/PitcherList. It was a blast. I don't know how I have a voice today. I streamed from, I believe it was 10 to 2:30, and then returned again at 3, to which I streamed from 3 until midnight. I can't thank you guys for joining me on stage. PJ, thank you so much. Justin, Mason, Dan, PL Discord joining me. We had Rum Diesel on there as well. James Chiano, Carson Picard, Jason Collette. Thank you all truly for joining me on stage. Kyle Bland, I was there. Just a great day. And we're going to be doing more of those. And in the future, when playback, which should have you the ability for us to watch MLB.TV games together in the near future. Let's say it's going to happen in April. I can't wait. We had it last year. We're going to have those games all day. That is, even when I'm not there, we're going to have games playing inside of that channel. Treat that like your MLB watch party home with the best community on the internet. Seriously, all you need is MLB.TV subscription or your cable provider, and you'll be able to watch these games with us. So it's completely free to do so. You have to have that MLB.TV subscription. So go to playback.tv/PitcherList. Come on by. I'm also streaming 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every single morning. I mean, today it's past 12 p.m. What do you know? You get bonus content, and we're going to talk about yesterday's games. Oh, man. So the SP roundup obviously led with Garrett Crochet. What are we going to do with this? This is 6 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 8 strikeouts. So I had my hesitations about Garrett Crochet. There were a couple things that I did not like. One was the situation, and this is really honestly the biggest pushback I'm going to give you. It's not just that he's on the White Sox, and he lost this game because it was against Tarek Skubal, and they scored, what, 0 runs? That's right, 0 runs. It's Tarek Skubal. But it's also the offenses that he has to face. This was against the Tigers, which obviously helped today. 11 whiffs, 32% CSW, 87 pitches. But also the fact that the next one's Atlanta, which I don't want to do for Garrett Crochet. I mean, I don't think that's a crazy statement to make. Now, he does get a better matchup after that, but then it's Twins, Rays, Phillies. I mean, look, I don't want to go after Crochet because I still feel like we're in a cherry bomb scenario with him. And he does get the Guardians after Atlanta. I totally get it. But right now, if you go and pick up Crochet, you have to hold on for 10 days because you should not be starting him against Atlanta. I mean, maybe it does work out. Absolutely. I've considered him Michael Kopech from the left side, right? It's a fastball at 97, 98. Sometimes it was up to 100. And the really cool thing is that he has a lead extension too, like 7.2 feet extension, which is what? That's really good. So that 97 looks like 99, right? 100. And then when he throws 100, it's like 102 or something. The vertical break is bad, but that doesn't really matter. His VAA isn't great either. So it's really just extension and velocity, which does mean that he needs to have some command on it, right? If he's throwing these low, these fastballs, I don't think they're going to perform that well. And that's why you see 11 whiffs despite that absurd velocity. You also see his slider, where that only earned 5 whiffs on 36 thrown. And Crochet, I think yesterday got a lot of strikes on his slider, but watching him, I'm still a little concerned that he isn't a command guy with his slider. Like, it's going to be the games like yesterday where it works enough and that's cool, but I don't know if I trust this to be like, no, I've got my slider and like, I know where I'm going to put that and destroy lefties with this and then righties down and in, back foot, set up with that four seamer upstairs. Like, considering he's a 2-pitch pitcher, there is very much a sense that Crochet is still not as precise as it needs to be. But, I mean, this four-seamer should still be a very good pitch. How elite? I don't know, based on the not just the VAA and the vert. That's fine, as if he can command it. That's the biggest concern for me. And of course, that slider isn't as pristine and just, oh my gosh, filth that I want it to be. Throwing all the team contacts and stuff. It just means that Kira Crochet is just not the guy that I'm running through the wire for. It's weird because I normally would just be so excited. I mean, that's such a fun first start. But he's throwing so hard. And I'm going to watch all of this from Kira Crochet. And I so hope to be wrong. But yeah, that's my take right now on Crochet. And it might be something that I apply to a lot of these quote-unquote Spice Girls. That's the term I have for these young pitchers who we really like, who want to be aces. And by the end of the day, we'll know the real names about one out of five of them, right? But we all can see the potential of how they could soar. And we didn't really get any others yesterday because, I mean, it's opening day. It's kind of wild that the White Sox did that. And we have all these aces against ace games. I mean, Tarik Skubal was amazing, got the Gallows pull of 20 whiffs. We had Shane Bieber look so good. 6 innings, 0 runs for it, 1 walk and 11 strikeouts. It was against the Athletics. And I've been waiting all spring for data on Bieber. And this is what I've got. 92 miles per hour on his four seamer. Okay, so that's already a good, sure, it's not 91. It's not 93 sitting, which I wanted. I wanted to see 93 completely on Shane Bieber's on four seamer and sticking there, but 92.3. But its IVB is still good. It's at 17 inches, which it was at 16 in previous years. Extension is still good. It looks like he still has that flat angle as well, which all of a sudden I think, wait a second, a flat delivery, a good amount of extension, and solid vert. Wait, this could actually get whiffs upstairs again. Now at 92, you know, different than 93, but it's very possible. And what do you know? Yesterday, 5% swing strike rate. Okay, fine. But Shane Bieber against the Oakland Athletics, those 11 strikeouts are really nice. The cutter was a huge deal, 10 out of 22 whiffs. And honestly, I think that's the slider, and then the slider is really the curve. It's like it's Corey Kluber all over again, because he said he changes curveball grip, and he didn't throw any curves apparently. So it's clearly the slider is the curve. But yeah, I mean, this is great to see from Shane Bieber. Really good command of that cutter. It's against Oakland. So we still got to kind of see, it's like, all right, how does this pan out a bit? But yeah, he's not going to be a 20% strikeout guy. And I'm regretting so much that I didn't get more data that I believed in with Shane Bieber early in the year. I it's still one of those things. Even like, I put him at 30, I think, my final lock it in. And there's part of me that's like, I want him up to, by like Framber Valdez and Justin Steele. And I just didn't do it because I didn't have data. Ugh, should have done it. You know, I'm not infallible. Absolutely not. I'm in the business of good discussion, not being right. Okay. Frankie Montas against the Nationals. 6 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts. He got the streaming victory for me in PL Bot. Good stuff against the Nationals, who are a terrible offense. And he's able to keep batters off his fastball decently enough with those splitters and sliders for strikes. But yeah, I don't trust Frankie Montas at all. He gets the Phillies next. This was a very much, hey, I'm glad it worked out against the Nationals. He didn't allow a home run inside of Cincy, but you're going to allow a lot of home runs in Cincy. Okay, it's Cincy. Pablo Lopez was dope. It makes us feel dope. He threw a sweeper that was terrible. And what I love so much about Pablo Lopez is that he then threw more sweepers. He didn't turn away from it. It was a really bad one. It was hung. It was doinked, not doinked. It was blasted over the wall by Michael Garcia, of all people. And his four-seamer went 12 for 37 whiffs as well as he returned to the sweeper later on. I mean, it was just great. You should feel wonderful having Pablo Lopez. Obviously, on the other side was this guy named Cole Reagans. 6 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 9 strikeouts. 19 whiffs. Only Tarik Skubal had more at 20. Okay. Very quick, Cole Reagans. You guys obviously know he's dope. Royce Lewis looked so good, by the way. He took an 0-2 fastball that was inside and turned on it for a home run in the first inning. Reagans should not have put his four-seamer there, just so we're clear. Reagans, I would say his worst aspect is the fastball shape. He improved it a lot this year. Increased it by about a tick, I think, at times. He did actually go down to 96 by the end, but we saw mostly 97 through the start. But its IVB is up like 2 inches. 17, 18 inches of induced vertical brake is fantastic at that velocity, but it's not great extension. It's like 6 and change, and like really like 6, which is low, below average extension. And his VAA is steeper than we want. And what that means is that when Cole Reagans is throwing middle four seamers, those are going to be hit more often than you think at that velocity. So he really does need to focus on high locations being 55%, 60%. And it was only 44% yesterday. And through this 0-2 fastball to Royce Lewis, that was middle in. And there you go. It was sent out, right? He didn't really throw any four seamers above the zone. I feel like that is one of the areas that Reagans needs to improve a little bit just to avoid these kinds of higher hit per nines and those mistake pitches that will get hit. Everything else, though, I mean, the cutter looks great. The changeup looks great. The curve at times looks great. The slider, actually, I would say, is the worst commanded one of the lot, as he didn't really have too many that were down and under the zone, really at like back foot sliders to righties. At times he did, but there are some of those that missed, like the double from Correa. Even that whole inning, by the way, that third inning was so annoying. All three hits were like, nothing was just, oh no, that you deserved a massive destruction, right? A perfect cutter to Margot that was flared somehow into left center field, and great changeup, 1-1 to Royce Lewis, who again looked great, and he hit that end of the bat for a single. And then the slider that was down and in just on the plate enough for Correa to ground it over the third base bag. I said it was going to be quick on Reagans. Of course not. Anyway, he's dope. It makes us feel dope. He is so good. He also went 6 innings, guys, 97 pitches. Like, yeah, he's going to get wins when he's not against Pablo Lopez. Okay, cool. Awesome. All right, we got so many other guys to talk about. And of course, today and tomorrow starters, and we're going to talk about all of it after this break. Corbin Burns showed up for the Orioles. It was amazing. He allowed a home run in the first, and it was the funniest like Tungsten O'Doyle thing of Mike Trout homers in his first at bat of the year, and the Orioles lose like 13-1 or whatever it was. 11-3. Yeah, that Orioles offense is amazing. The home park is really helpful for Burns, and Burns is going to get so many wins. 11 strikeouts, 6 innings, 1 run, 1 hit, 0 walks. Literally, that was the only blemish, was that home run from Trout. And it was a slider at 1-1 that got too much of the plate. It was in the quadrant down and away, but it was enough there. And you can actually see like Trout was kind of in on the previous breaker. And there you go. But you got the King Cole, 39% CSW. It's classic Burns. You love to see it. Also, his curveball is looking really good. That was cool, too. Tyler Glasnow, he's going to ace. Got the win against the Cardinals. Honestly, the slider was the only good pitch. Fastball and curveball was not, but if you're not thinking about the slider when you think of Glasnow, you're doing it wrong, because I actually think it's one of the most underrated sliders in the game, because I don't think people recognize like that is what makes Tyler Glasnow who he is. Yu Darvish went against the Giants, 5 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. You love to see that line, especially after the tough one that he had before against the Dodgers in overseas in Korea. But I don't know if this was the best performance as far as how his pitches went. A lot of the stuff was well over the plate. And he didn't give in. And that's one of the things about Darvish that I'm really loving, is that he's utilizing all of his pitches to find the right one in a given situation. And I'm generally like, hey, Darvish, become a master of what you have and don't really use the whole palette. But it does actually look like he has a good feel for his palette right now. So I'm a huge, huge fan, and I love to see this from Darvish taking advantage of a weak lineup in San Francisco. Sadly, he didn't get a win because he was opposite Logan Webb, who did well. 6 innings of 2 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. But Darvish, I'm a huge fan of him. On that start of Logan Webb, he did great, and his slider, all of a sudden, 6 for 29 whiffs, 35% CSW. He's getting more horizontal movement on it, 4 extra inches. Yeah, he... precise location down in glove side. Guys, if Logan Webb has that, oh boy, sign me up. Like, truly sign me up. That I was in on Webb before, but I mean, now it's like, dude, you are going to go a 25% K rate doing that and also be going like 200 innings. This is amazing. I remember all the fear. I had someone in the industry send me a DM like, hey, are we actually afraid of Logan Webb? Because he's had like the worst spring training. And I just kind of shrugged. I was like, We can't really say anything about it. We hear nothing negative, so we got to assume he's fine. And yeah, he's fine. Zach Gallen might not be, though. He got the win against the Rockies in Arizona. It was a 14-run third inning. And I can see some people pushing back, saying, Nick, Gallen had two ticks down on his velocity because, hey, you know, he was up and also had the rest and everything. That's why. No. Mm-mm. He was down the entire start. It was a pretty stable velocity tracker. So I'm a little worried, honestly. And we, entering this season, I think I fell down on Gallen on the 11th because someone made a great point. Hey, Zach Gallen threw 240 innings, including the playoffs last year. That is such a massive workload. And it's pretty typical that we see some sort of degradation the next year. I also want to note that Striker, one of our new stats on the site, which is strike minus ICR rate. If you're not familiar with ICR rate, it's just all the good contact that hitters get. It includes barrel rate, hard hit rate, solid contact, inflators, and burners. And it's essentially all the contact you don't want to allow as a pitcher. So you throw strikes, and are those strikes getting crushed by hitters? That's strike minus ICR rate. It hates Zach Gallen because Gallen is not a massive strike rate guy. He throws curveballs and changeups out of the zone and is very much almost aligned with like the Snell method of not giving in. But his walk rates haven't actually been that, right? He's always found a way to avoid the walk. Like when he needs to get to, I guess, the two balls or three balls, he just throws in the zone then. And what really happens is that his four seamers get a ton of called strikes low and he's able to live in the zone there. And then in those deeper counts, I'm assuming, I need to look into this, the curve and the changeup are not really utilized. It's just more of just like, all right, I'll throw a fastball and make this happen. I'm guessing that's just how he avoids it. But it is a towing the line that I don't know that Gallen can survive forever with it. And man, also throwing in the whole velocity dip here, the innings from last year, I'm a little bit scared. So his slider and cutter is always unreliable. By the way, that was 7 over 20 strikes in this. Not fun. That's a 35% strike rate. So not the like the best start for Gallen here. And I hope that he's okay. I hope it was just kind of like ramping up as opposed to, yeah, I'm throwing in softer now. Justin Steele, 4.2 innings of 100 runs, 3 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks. He was looking so good. Gets a really good Rangers offense, and then he strained his hamstring. He's getting an MRI today. He's going to be on the IL. We don't know how long. I'm going to assume it's like four to six weeks. Hamstrings are the worst, guys. I have absolutely pulled my hamstring before. It is terrible. It takes time. And you never really know. You just got to not push it. You don't want to stretch it. You don't want to do anything. You just got to let the dang thing heal, and then it's terrifying trying to test it after. Because the worst thing you can do is test it too soon and then not ramp it up properly, and then it just haunts you the entire year. So I'm going to just say right now, Justin Steele's out to like May 15th. That's how I'm going to treat this. I hope it's before then. It shouldn't be longer than then, but it stinks. And man, he was looking so good. I finally got in on him in one league, and it's the worst. And ugh. Justin Steele. Oh, man. All right. I'm Jose Berríos against Zach Eflin. It was a very interesting one. Berríos, 6 innings, 200 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. So positives here. The four-seamer was, actually, I'm sorry, the sinker was like slightly up, I think, in velocity. And the four-seamer, speaking of up, was actually safe for elevation. Really good curveball locations down and glove side. Like, he really avoided the heart of the plate. And I normally see Berríos just kind of throw fastballs a bit over the plate. And I like seeing this more meticulous version of Berríos. I don't know if that's what we're going to see, but I hope we do. And it's kind of funny. I see a start like this, and I understand why Berríos is like favored by people. I'm like, oh yeah, right. This looks like a pitcher who can just go out there every six, you know, go 6 innings, and that's great. But then you realize, oh wait, but that's not just what he always does. It's like what a Toby is. It's like one of those, like, yeah, no, I can go out there 6 innings and perform. That's fine. But yeah, is it enough to win your fantasy leagues? I don't know. This was a fantastic start. I hope he holds on to that. The other side, oh boy, Zach Eflin, 5.2 innings of 600 runs, 6 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. So not a good one for him. His rhythm was broken. Like, that is Zac Efron last year was fantastic because he had everything cooking. Sinkers were over here. Forcing were saved for two strikes, which he actually did in this one. He got whiffs upstairs with it, which is so funny because it's a dead zone, but can surprise with it. You have cutters for strikes over here. You have curveballs over there, and you have this rare sweeper. Thing is, this one, the sweeper was really bad. Like, it just kept hanging over the middle. Like, a lot of stuff here was just not well spotted. And when you're a guy like Eflin, who is kitchen sink, but more so is a command-focused kitchen sink, you might have these in the beginning of the year where they're just not clicking yet. And it's not like Bassett, where Bassett's just like, no, my sinker, like, I know I got that going. And then everything else just kind of figures itself out. Eflin needs the whole shtick working, right? All of the ship just working together. So I understand why this one wasn't good. I don't feel like it's a death sentence for the season for Zac Efron. So, hey, the Jays are a good offense, whatever. Nathan Eovaldi went opposite of Justin Steele, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 1 walk and 3 Ks, sitting 96-ish, looks like 95.8. We'll take that. Lots of secondaries. That's how he should be throwing. I think he really learned that last year. Splitters were looking good. And 10 out of 19 cutter strikes is fine. It's fine. It's like, what is that? 61%? No, it's like slightly above. I don't know. Not the highest strike rate on the cutter. Okay. All I'm getting at is that Eovaldi, as long as he's throwing roughly 96, he should be fine. And this is cool. 19% CSW, 6 whiffs is not fine, but like, it's okay. Jesus Luzardo went against the Pirates. 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 2 hits, 2 walks, and 8 strikeouts, 18 whiffs here as his, four-seamer command was good. He made the 7. Not belonging to pitcher group 7. Like, doing the 7 of four-seamers upstairs and fastballs, four-seamers also inside glove side to right-handers along the whole line of down and up. That is why I call the 7 if you look at the catcher. And pairing that with a slider that did not make many mistakes inside the zone is great. And that's how you get 18 whiffs. So, good stuff here from Luzardo. It is also the Pirates. So, he's going to have nights like these. This is what he did last year. He would go like these ridiculous 9 strikeouts, 1 walk game. And then the next one's just like, oh gosh, he got destroyed in this one. So it's going to have some volatility, but this is why you did draft Luzardo in the first place. You have Brian Bello. 5 innings, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 2 strikeouts. He did well. Four-seamer is gone now. Changeup was not, actually. It was 13 for 28 strikes. That's his best pitch. So the fact that he got through this with that is really, really nice to see. And also the slider that we've been encouraged by this offseason, thinking like, hey, cool, this is like a 25% swing strike rate pitch. It was only 2 for 20 in this one. He floated the pitch a lot. Really, the sinker just came through for him. And Bello, honestly, one of the better commanded sinkers because he's able to go front hip with that against lefties. Rare skill there. So when the changeup is better, I hope that really solidifies this, that the strikeouts can follow. But hey, we'll take this all day. Framber Valdez allowed 6 walks against the Yankees. 4.2 innings, 300 runs, 5 hits, 5 walks, 5 Ks, 6 walks. I mean, no cutter to be seen. 3 of them, sorry. I don't know where you showed up, but whatever. Yeah, not fun for Framber Valdez there, but you got to imagine it's going to rebound. Okay. Patrick Sandoval got destroyed by the Orioles, and you should not be starting Patrick Sandoval. Mitch Keller does not have good command, and he couldn't take down the Marlins. But he gets the Nationals next, and I guess we're going to do that. But man, he's a cherry bomb. 4 earned runs, 7 hits, 2 walks across 5.2 innings with only just 3 strikeouts for Mitch Keller. Not fun. Nestor Cortez was opposite Framber Valdez. 5 innings of 4 earned runs, 7 base runners, and 5 strikeouts. Tough first inning. Could not locate four seamers well. It was either way too high or way over the middle. And then he adjusted after that. It was a lot better. So props to him for sticking around for 4 innings after just allowing 1 earned run after, honestly, on a good fastball inside. He was trying to do that. Jake Myers, believe it or not, turned on that and hit a long ball. Props to him. Overall, solid outing. 37% CSW for Cortez. The Yankee fans should be happy with this. It does look like he's going to be good. I don't know if he's going to be like ace Nestor like he was in 2022, but he's going to be a solid starter, I think, for the Yankees. And this is a good indication. I will mention, I don't know how much I love the cutter and the slider for Cortez. So we'll see still. But this looks like you're relatively safe having him into your 12-teamers. He does get the Diamondbacks next, who just put up 14 in 1 inning, right? I don't know. I'm still going to start him for that one. I think that was just a lot of things. And who was on the opposite side of that game? That was Kyle Freeland, who, I'm so sorry, I put out that stupid tweet suggesting that maybe Kyle Freeland throwing 3.5 ticks harder could be okay in Arizona. No. 2.1 innings of 10 runs. We don't do that. He's going to Wrigley next. Maybe that's better. All right, fine. Josiah Gray got destroyed in Cincy. 4 innings of 7 earned runs, and he allowed 2 home runs, and we're not going to touch that. Alex Wood against the Guardians. You know that was going to work. 3.1 innings of 6 runs. Well, we didn't know. Guardians aren't that good of an offense, but maybe they actually aren't that bad of an offense. But yeah, you shouldn't be trusting Alex Wood. And last but not least, you have Luis Castillo. 5 innings, 4 earned runs, 6 hits, 2 walks, 5 Ks. Are you scared about Luis Castillo? Don't be. Please don't. I know it was a scattershot 4-seamer yesterday, but don't worry. He's fine. The roof was closed, but it was still apparently not temperature covered in Seattle, which means it was kind of cold. And we know that Castillo is much better in warm weather, but I don't think his 4-seamer is going to be that scattershot. Oh, and of course, Miles Michaelis, 4.1 innings, 5 runs against the Dodgers. I mean, come on. We knew that was going to happen. All right. Today's starting pitching rankings. We've got Strider, Wheeler, Kirby, Bobby Miller. All obvious. These are auto starts here. Freddy Peralta, duh. Joe Musgrove, throw him out there. Merrill Kelly against Rocky Rodia. Yeah, we're going to do that. Nick Pivetta at Seattle. I'm going to do it. Probable starts here is Chris Bassett, AJ Puck, Aaron Civale, and Christian Javier. I actually am kind of tempted to move down Aaron Civale from versus Toronto, considering how well they did yesterday, but it's okay. It's fine. Same with Christian Javier against the Yankees. It's more in questionable, I would say. And there's a temptation even to put Logan Allen above Aaron Civale and make him a green. That is a streaming pick that I would be going for. But I'm going to say start of questionable start is Logan Allen against Oakland. In Oakland, you have Carlos Rodon. At Houston, Kyle Harrison. At the Padres, Martin Perez is an option against the Marlins. And Jose Quintana against the Brewers. I don't really want to do any of these except maybe Logan Allen. And I could be convinced to say, hey, look, Nick, you should put him underneath AJ Puck. AJ Puck, you should be going with Chris Bassett. You might want to rest the first one. I get it because he didn't do well in this first start last year, but I think he's ready to go against the Rays. And in the do not start tier, you have Ross Stripling, Cal Quantrill, and Zach Thompson. Come on. Don't do those. Zach Thompson against the Dodgers. Oh, boy, no. Tomorrow's games, Joe Ryan, Grayson Rodriguez, Tanner Bibee start off because those are amazing, amazing matchups. I mean, Bibee's against Oakland. Grayson against the Angels. Joe Ryan against the Royals. He's going to cruise. Max Fried against the Phillies. A little bit tougher, but you're going to do that one. Yoshinobu Yamamoto against the Cardinals. I'm doing it even though he went overseas and didn't do well in that one game. Who cares? Much better situation. Should get this win as he goes against the Cardinals. I have no faith in Zach Thompson. Not Zach Thompson. I apologize. Lance Lynn. On the other side of this, Hunter Green is against the Nationals, and I'm going to go for that for the strikeout. Same with Dylan Cease against the Giants. Aaron Nola is going against Atlanta. I'm still doing that. Logan Gilbert against the Red Sox and Cutter Crawford on the other side of that. I'm doing both of those. Those are auto starts for me. If you have these guys, you are starting them. Probable start tier, D.L. Hall against the Mets. You might want to be a little tepid just because we don't know how long D.L. Hall is going to go. We haven't gotten amazing data on it yet. I'm doing it. I'm confident in this. Jared Jones is my stream pick of the day against the Marlins. I think he's just good enough for strikeouts and whatnot. Like, he should go 5 innings. He's stretched out. He went 6 in spring. Kenta Maeda against the White Sox and Michael Soroka on the other side against the Tigers. Both of those guys should just perform well. Like, we saw 1-0 yesterday. Soroka is a Toby, I think, against the Tigers. Excited to see data on him. While Maeda is above him because he does have more strikeout ability. I hope he has a splitter and slider working against the White Sox. JP Sears is also someone to consider against the Guardians. I know they just did well against Alex Wood, but Sears' fastball is way better. And if he does get that sweeper and change up down, like, that should really work out. So I know you might not get a win here, but I think that the strikeouts themselves are just making it worthwhile to start against the Guardians. Even though the Guardians aren't a strikeout team, Sears' fastball just outlines that. Ryan Weathers is also here, even though I'm like a little weirded out, but like, is Ryan Weathers that great still? He was good at the beginning of March, but it's gotten a little bit worse through spring. I'm still going to do it against the Pirates, but it's not something I need to do. Seth Lugo against the Twins and Luis Severino against the Brewers. I'm cool with Seth Lugo feels like a Toby without Royce Lewis in that Twins lineup. And then you have Luis Severino, who has done well in the spring, and I could just be overlooking that maybe he is a better guy from a stuff perspective, not just I'm not tipping anymore as he hosts the Brewers. It's not in Milwaukee. It's in New York. You have questionable start tier. You have some guys that are not going to be in this tier, but just have really tough matchups. Like, all of these are tough. So Hunter Brown against the Yankees, Yusei Kikuchi against the Rays, Zach Littell against the Jays, Jordan Hicks against the Padres, and Marcus Stroman against the Astros. I think if any of these guys had a good matchup, they would be in the probable start. And do not start tier, you have Griffin Cannon getting the Orioles. You just can't do that. Cody Bradford could get a win against the Cubs. I'm not really going to go for it. But then again, it is Kyle Hendricks against the Rangers, and that is a decent win chance. Same with Tommy Henry against the Rockies. I know it's Tommy Henry, but if he goes five innings, he could get a win, because it's Austin Gomber as our worst play today against the Diamondbacks. There's also Patrick Corbin in Cincinnati, which you don't want to do, and of course Lance Lynn against the Dodgers. All right, that is it today. Long boy. I also have another podcast to record right now, which is the SP Fab 4 Cast. That is for PL Pro members only. I'm going to be going over all of the next week's games, as well as the two-star pitchers and the guys you should be focusing on for Fab on Sundays. It's PL Pro only. You got to check it out by getting a PL Pro membership. But that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.